Cheers, bro. You know, that song, that's, I don't know why that song's in my head, you know, he doesn't look a bit like Jesus. Right, and Danny was introducing, like, he looks a little bit like Jesus, but he talks like Jesus. After Andy brought the hammer this morning, at the end of the service, Pastor Roger said, if you thought that this morning from Andy was challenging, wait until you hear tonight. And my wife, in her infinite wisdom, leaned over and said, but you're here. While we're at conference, one of the things that we were challenged about was kind of a light theme that kind of came through most, if not all, of the messages, was the idea of living what you preach. That there's some a certain amount of weight that comes through having lived through something that you then share, rather than teaching on a subject you have no experience about. And it's usually really handy to have done that, because when you've lived through something, you've got to the other side, and you can talk about the victory that you've experienced in. And it's encouraging, it's awesome, and it's come from a place of strength. You've lived out the story that you're going to share. This is not that message. This is one I'm living in. This is a struggle. It's not a victory story. This is, I've been working this out, and when you realize, discussing, you probably realize I've been living this one out too. This is a struggle story. Not victory yet, but to explain, I'm gonna describe how I resolved that I would never make my mum cry again. It does not crown me in glory. I was somewhere between 8 and 10. And living in southeast of England, in Essex. And my mum and dad, they were great, wonderful parents. I struggled with being smacked. Not imagine the number of children do, and the adults who have been. You're so awesome. What did you do right? Oh, good on you, Norris. And I don't know what happens on this particular occasion. I don't remember the backstory behind it, but something inside me, this one occasion, kind of just snapped. And I thought, that's it, I'm running away. I concluded that my mum and dad didn't love me. And because they didn't love me, I didn't want to be in a house where I wasn't loved. And so I... You realize how wacky and weird this process of planning that I didn't have unfolded. I don't think I packed a bag, but I did write a letter. I wrote a letter to my mum. I said, I'm leaving home, running away. This is why I don't think you're. I gave it a fair bit of detail too. I had my own bit of rationale behind it, gave it to her, and she broke down. She was so broken and messed up by it. And she said, okay, you go to your room and wait for dad to come back. And for some reason, I didn't go back home. I think in my heads, I was fully expecting to get given a right belt. And that would only have given me further justification. This is why I'm leaving home. I don't love me. Terrified. Mum, Dad, listen, you're good. But I was waiting for it. I knew what was coming. And Dad got home. Mum, still crying, showed Dad this letter. Dad came upstairs, sat on my bed. And I don't remember many deep conversations that I had with my dad. I had one before I got baptized, and the other was this. He did not smack me. For about 20 minutes, which when you were a child is a very long time, we talked. He was very firm that what I'd done was wrong. he did not shout or raise his voice. He explained everything about what was really happening. That thing where parents sometimes say, "I know you better than you know yourself." In this case, Dad had it. And by the end of this conversation, in which he did not use smack or shout or anything, he patiently explained, I was gut-wrenched. Oh my Lord, what am I? I will never, ever make my mom cry. It was discipline, makes sense, that I'd never known before. And this is the process that I am living through. I'm not going to talk about having discipline. I'm talking about being disciplined, receiving it. To the background in tonight's message, I've been reading through Proverbs, and Proverbs is great because it's kind of instructional, but more I've been reading it this time around, it's like, it's a real guide to what people are like. And it explains that actually Proverbs doesn't give you any gray area. You're either doing good or you're doing evil. You're either being diligent or you're being lazy. You're either being wise or you're being foolish. There's no tier system. There's no super wise, quite wise, wise, semi-wise, junior wise, not really, and foolish. No, it's either one or the other. And in Proverbs, I'm challenged, one or the other, which are you? Over and over and over and over again. In Proverbs 15, verse 32, it says, those who disregard discipline despise themselves. The one who heeds correction gains understanding. Disciplining, rebuke, correction, is something generally we accept is necessary in parenting. Yeah, we did the parenting course, it was last year. Time flies, eh? Wow. And we discussed how do you discipline? How should we discipline? But the more I read Proverbs, the more I find that the art of discipline has a wider context than just parent-child. In its best form, it should happen between friends and between colleagues and peers and from pastor. I get it from pastor. However, as a society, I get that there's a sense that it's becoming something we're more and more allergic to. I don't know where you stand on Israel Folau's situation from a few weeks ago, but whether or not you agree with what he said and how he presented it, the backlash that came back to him sent a really clear message to me that you can have an opinion, but don't you dare share it if it could hurt me. And if it does, boy, you will get the hammer. I read an interesting article last week in the Herald featuring these social psychologists who kind of study different groups of people and their behavioral traits. And this particular article was talking about Generation Z, which is the age bracket of people who were born between 1995 to 2010. And this social psychologist's observations, and it's not limited to that generation, but these behavioral traits were becoming more and more profound and more normal in this generation of people, was that these people generally feel very unsafe in disagreement and unable to handle what they consider dangerous opinions. But it goes further and more dangerous than that and sadder than that. The suicide and self-harm rates are so much higher in Generation Z. Problems with anxiety and vulnerability are so much more higher in this Generation Z bracket from this perspective of taking offense to simple things. And it's not limited to that age bracket. How is it? Is it just me, or have we become so thin-skinned? find myself asking that question, but then I also find myself asking, well, what if we could buck the trend? How could that make our church different? If we could buck the trend. Now, I don't know, well, married people here, you would understand exactly what I mean when I say that these days, the number one source of discipline I receive from a woman, from my wife, and it's no intention, she's not taking it upon herself to be the disciplinarian or anything like that. She just naturally is around me and sees the best and the worst in me, and if she sees the worst, she can't help, she's got to call it out. It comes from a really loving place. And it works both ways. I get to do.
Oh boy, when we get home.
naturally, as a husband and a wife living under the same roof, you see the best and worst in one another, and you. I don't know of many husbands or wives that don't say something. You need to. You have to. And she's great. I love her. As I was preparing this, I got to think, well, who else is there? Who speaks into that part of my life and is able to call out something that actually this isn't good? I don't have a very long list. One of my biggest struggles, and maybe it's, yeah, I love where I live, I love the people I'm around, and I have lots of friends, but it's weird that I have so many friends and feel lonely. We have great people that I hang out with in church week by week. The only trouble is, and you probably have experienced the same if you've been on team for any length of time, is that as you're on team, a lot of your conversation is while you're doing tasks, and so you don't have a lot of time to talk more than the standards. Hey man, how are you? Great, yeah, good, thanks. You, yeah, awesome. And I get, if I'm honest, I get to the end of the day, I've not gotten to know anyone any better. However, I do have one or two. I won't mention names, but that I have been so blessed by just a couple of people who have dared to go beyond the standard question-answer conversation and have shown me that they are not afraid of my reality. They're not afraid of me saying I've had a bad day or hearing the reasons why. The interesting outcome of that is that as they've blessed me like that and have embraced my honesty, I've found myself unafraid to hear it back. And as a result, in a two-way relationship, we've actually both become better people as a result. The word authenticity is a word that we use a lot from the platform. And there's this authenticity that kind of just grows from being unafraid to hear some honest truth. And getting to a place, and it does take time, where you can actually start to speak into the other person, into another. So, I mean, I have a few questions tonight, but outside of the marriage context for married here, outside of maybe the parental context or family context for non-married here, who is close enough to see enough to speak into something that might be going wrong? If we don't have one or two, we might need something. The verse itself, Proverbs 15:32, it's a warning about disregarding discipline. And the Proverbs is full of it, talking about discipline and rebuke and correction and instruction, and people who receive it and people who don't. The danger. And yeah, this is not a nice message. Sorry, we got two in morning and night. If we don't take it, the implications are huge. If we disregard discipline, that I have this theory that every word in the Bible is chosen quite deliberately. And when the writer of Proverbs says those who regard discipline despise themselves, that's not just an excuse for a nice fancy word there. That's deadly serious. Not being able to take a word of correction or instruction from another person is more than just a state of ignorance towards them or disregard for the other person. It's actually a statement of, I don't really care about me. And I wonder if we hide behind something like Jesus talking about the speck of sawdust and the plank in your own eye. I think we've got it actually maybe in the next slide. Matthew 7 verses 3 and verse 5. We know this one quite well. Yeah, why do you look at the speck of sawdust in your brother's eye and pay no attention to the plank in your own eye? Basically almost says the same thing in verse 4, but in verse 5 it says, you hypocrite. First take the plank out of your own eye, and then you will see clearly to remove the speck from your brother's eye. How many times do we find ourselves thinking that's the justification for saying, you worry about your business, I'll worry about mine. Or, I'll clean my house and get all right before I ever mention anything about anyone else's house. Of course, it's the never-ending cycle. We've never got a clean house. I don't think that's what Jesus is saying. I think when Jesus is talking in Matthew 7, it's not an excuse for uninvolvement in another person's life and actually calling out something, but I think it's simply saying, look, don't call out something if you're not willing to be called out. Actually, I need to be called out, and don't want to call out, but sometimes it needs to be done. And if we can't hear it, and we have that, that self-despisal that Proverbs 15:32 talks about, it's to say, I don't matter. Which is weird, because it contradicts, when we heard it at conference, that it contradicts a God who pours purpose into every moment. And to God, every moment matters. I can't go to God and say, oh, no, this doesn't matter. However, if we're in that place and we say, okay, I'm going to try and take discipline well, I think we have to do more than just suck it up. And hope, I'm gonna take it. I think it needs more. And I thought Andy's message this morning was awesome about how, being renewed in our thinking and thinking differently. Actually, thinking differently about discipline I found be really, really helpful, because often we think discipline, we think punishment. And we think that discipline is reserved for the ne'er-do-wells, the people we really can't really stand. We need to do something about them. The people we don't enjoy much, and the people who are just troublemakers. And we associate that with the bad people. Whereas, actually, in the Bible, discipline is a gift. Proverbs 3, verse 11 and 12 says, my son, do not despise the Lord's discipline. Do not resent his rebuke. Because the Lord disciplines those he loves, as a father the son he delights in. Discipline is related to love and to delight, not to being resentful or bitter or angry or frustrated. No, it's I love you too much. I love you enough to say something. I care too much to leave you alone. There's too much at stake to not be able to take it. But what's to be gained? The Message translation of Proverbs 15:32 puts it slightly differently. It says, an undisciplined, self-willed life is puny. An obedient, God-filled life is spacious. The NIV, the translation I'm reading from, talks about when you can take correction, you gain understanding. There's something that happens when you take the correction from another person, that you move from this real narrow-minded thinking of, no, I don't need you, I don't need you, to, oh, it may be, it's one thing to know what to do, but you know that, okay, I should take discipline, I should take the correction from someone. But it's only once you've done it you realize why. And that's where the understanding comes in. It's all very well to know that you are to do something. It's another thing entirely to realize why. And the Message Bible tells us that we have this spacious life that awaits us when we take it on board. Your mind is actually expands. As you see it from another perspective, you take on someone's feedback. A couple of weeks ago, Brendan spoke about growth. And I think he quoted from 2 Corinthians 3, verse 18. Do we have it on the lines? We do. Fabulous. Okay. The words there, we all who with unveiled faces contemplate the Lord's glory are being transformed into his image with ever-increasing glory, which comes from the Lord who is the Spirit. I love that idea that Brendan brought out, that we are being transformed. Day by day by day, we're being transformed into his image. It is a process. We're becoming more and more and more like him. In order to do that, I need you. It's not enough to say, oh, I'm relying on God. That's all I'm relying on. Actually, I need Pastor Roger, who will sit down for a catch up, and he'll say, and you know, he'll bring things up. You know, maybe you shouldn't do this. Maybe you shouldn't try this. How's this going? How's that going? The great thing is that when you have a chat with GP, he's worked really hard in building a culture of encouragement. So it's always correction from it's never correction from a place of bringing you down, that whole discipline being a punishment thing. No, it's discipline being a gift. It's discipline designed to lift you up. And a lot of this is about receiving discipline and correction, but in giving it, there's a lot of wisdom that needs to be taken on board. You know, we're called to speak the truth in love. Actually, every word that we say in correction, in rebuke, if it needs to be there, has to lift them up. If we have gotten to the end of, you know, disciplining another person, putting them down, we're as guilty of a bad job as of not being able to receive it. But to reach my potential, I need you for two reasons. I need church because church, as being preached, church is God's plan A. There's a unity here that when we are a united people doing life together, it's a mirror of the unity that God is. But more, second reason, you have gifts, talents, insights, and perspectives that I don't have, but boy, I need. Because God is in you. Part of the reason I cannot afford to turn you down is because actually there's God inside you, and I dare not turn God away. And so, I'm about done, but on my first full day of conference, I wrote down three questions. Am I correctable? Am I picky with how God is allowed to correct me? And am I choosy with who he uses? So, yeah, I think we might pray and we'll go from there. Father, thank you that we are in that process of being transformed into the image we were always designed to be. And thank you that you fixed it and we need each other. We cannot do without. I pray for a blessing on the relationships in this room. That there is a natural closeness and strength in the relationships here. That are deep, are loving, are good, and result in the freedom and the willingness to speak into one another's lives. I pray that we have the guts to raise things that are wrong and the wisdom to deliver it. And I pray also that as discipline is done, it's received even better. As we become a church that can take a tough word, I pray that there's no hint of offense. I pray that there's every sense of being encouraged up. And that as a result, our church and our community are blessed. In Jesus' name.